You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
This was me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hey, everybody, and thank you for joining me today on Ground Zero Growth. I'm joined with my good friend, Rusty Fulling. How are you doing today, Rusty?
Man, good to see you. It's been a little while since we've gotten some FaceTime, so thanks for having me on.
It has been a little bit, and it's an absolute pleasure. I love your upbeat. So I'll read through the bio here. Oh. So Rusty Fulling serves founder and CEO of Fulling Management and Accounting in Olathe, Kansas, April 2000. We kind of need to pause there. So 25 years?
Yeah, just keep going. That just means I'm old. So you can keep going in the interview.
Okay, sorry.
There.
We'll gloss over 25 years of business. Yeah, all right. Focus on helping business leaders make sense of their numbers, grow their profits, and gain peace of mind. Yeah. That's huge. Peace of mind. I mean, if there's one thing that keeps business owners awake, it's a significant part of it definitely has to be the numbers, right?
Absolutely. Man, we often hear from business owners, yeah, that this is what's keeping me up at night. I'm just worried, can I make payroll? Can I, you know, pay my vendors? I'm not getting money from my customers that I've done work for. And so, yeah, I think that peace of mind, boy, once we get there, it's just like a load, you know, taken off the shoulders of the business owner. So definitely that when we talk about 25 years, it is really neat to hear and be reminded of some of those stories along the way of business owners we've gotten to partner up with over that time. So
I'm going to give you an opportunity to brag. I want to hear a success story, because when we look at this and when we hear peace of mind and when we hear, you know, my first thought is I guarantee there's some stereotypical, you know, $2 million in revenue up from $1 million last year. Things are awesome. You know, and then you ask some question like, oh, fantastic. So, you know, how's food on the table? Right. And then it's like, oh, it's ramen noodles, and I didn't pay myself last week.
I think of some of the stories, and I mean, we still get these today of those owners that are going, hey, we're going to make, you know, our sales are going to be $4 million this year. And you're going, hey, good for you. And then, you start drilling down into, well, what's the challenge? And like, I haven't had a paycheck for months. And like, now, wait a minute. There's a disconnect between that top line and the bottom line. And sometimes we've seen some that maybe they're selling a product and they don't realize they're actually losing money on that product. And so just getting involved, helping them understand, please don't continue to sell that product, because every time you do, you're losing $100. And so doubling your sales is not going to fix the problem.
No, you're not wrong. It brings me up a former business endeavor, you know, when I jumped into, and I think maybe I've talked to you a little bit about it, maybe not, but it's, you know, everybody thought the colleague I was with was a great salesman, and I made the point. I was like, yeah, but he would buy things at X, sell them at Y, and Y was lower than X.
Yeah.
I think I can sell pretty well at that point too, if that's the angle I'm taking.
Yes.
And it was difficult, because it's like, what's wild too is, you know, you can work almost like a Ponzi scheme on that. Mm. You know, you're running it through credit cards, and you're, you know, it's like, all right, so we got the money for this project that helps pay for the materials for that project and somehow manages to give us enough to maybe take home. But we're behind now on this project, which means we're going to get the next project.
And unfortunately, Ponzi catches up with you. And there's only so much, you know, so much Ponzi is going to do for you. And I think that's where a lot of times bringing in what we do is more fractional CFO type work for companies. And it is bringing somebody in sometimes and saying, hey, let's stop the, you know, the cycle that is just not healthy. And let's find a way to make this really a viable business. That's where, again, that what we talk about is really that, helping you get clarity, grow profits, and gain peace of mind.
That's good. All right. So now we rewind the clock a little bit.
Yeah.
So were you in high school? Is this what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh, man. What is funny, I actually worked with my dad, who was an electrical contractor. So we did a lot of electrical work on like new McDonald's restaurants and hotels and different things. And so, you know, I was digging ditches and running wire and all that kind of stuff. And in high school, I actually got to do an internship doing some bookkeeping at a a company called Pioneer Hybrid. They're a big seed company in the farming industry. And I couldn't believe people get paid to work in an office. It was just like, wow, this is amazing. So I think that's where my calling began. Is I'm like, wow, this is all right. And yeah, for me, it was taking some business classes, some accounting classes, and things just kind of started clicking. And so, but yes, it was the high school days. You must have really done some good research there, Sam.
You know what? It's more about, if I'm honest, I feel like the high school period is where external influence was at its max. Yeah. You know, that's the period where it's like, all right, Rusty, sorry, you can't be a outlaw cowboy astronaut.
Yes.
Right? Maybe. Or can you? You know, it's, and so what is it we're going to do? So,
yeah.
And I'm with you. I resonate. The first time I had a help desk job, I think is what, that was what it was, because I was coming in off a recycling plant and I was over there like, wow, I get to just sit here? I'm paid to sit here in air conditioning. This is wild.
Well, and I think it wasn't so much the paid to, you know, getting to sit there and not getting calluses on the hand, which, boy, those are good jobs too, but it was, I think, beginning to make sense of the numbers and seeing the value that these numbers could make in a business. And I think when you really see the value of what you get to do, again, whether you're digging ditches or whether you're, you know, a president of some big corporation, man, that's where, again, that clarity, that purpose begins to come in. So, yeah, for some of us, it may be a high school, just a little glimpse of that, and then maybe clarity over the next, you know, several years.
So, you had an internship in high school, and it was love at first sight, and the rest is history.
We'll leave it at that. But it was definitely helpful to get some exposure. And I'd say for those younger listeners that are still trying to find their way, boy, test out different things. Some things are going to be natural. You're going to get, you know, just that good feeling, that purpose. Hey, this is where I need to be. And sometimes it's just a good experience. I mean, I delivered papers. I actually did some IT work back in the day, and did programming and websites, and you know, just again, kind of testing the waters and what sticks and what are you good at? And so I think there's definitely some natural things that come along. But I got to do that in a little bit in high school, and then when I was in college, again, I got to do an incredible internship in Oklahoma City at a petroleum company. And what was really fun, I had learned some spreadsheet, or how spreadsheet works back in the day. And they just thought I was the next Bill Gates, you know, this kid knows how to do spreadsheets. That was back in Lotus 1-2-3, probably before your time. But anyway, that was, that was just kind of fun being able to bring some knowledge from another company. And that worked into, about a 3 or 4 year internship, and then really helped then pave the way for my first job out of college.
You know, it's kind of funny. I told somebody the other day, and this might be a new one for you, but IBM still uses Lotus internally. They had, and I bothered to Google this one day, because if you work for IBM, now I might be crazy, anybody's welcome to correct me, but as of like, say 9 years ago, about 9 years ago, if you worked for IBM, you got a Lenovo computer, which used to be their brand. You got it with installed Linux OS, so not Microsoft or Mac. And you had it with Lotus Notes, Lotus 1-2-3. Yep. A little bit of research. I guess Microsoft messed them over on an agreement at one point, and that was a big enough deal that they were like, we are never using a Microsoft product ever again. So. Yeah. It's interesting though, because I know what Lotus is. I know what Lotus Notes is. Yeah. I know what, I mean, probably looked different, I would hope, then, but it still looked a little dated, if I'm being honest, IBM. Sorry.
Sure.
Thank you for the opportunity, but it did look a little dated when I used it. So, it's all right. So you were using Lotus 1-2-3. And which, you know, IBM equivalent of spreadsheets, and you were like, hey, this is, you know, it's a knack, and this company sees it, and they're, which props to the company for seeing it, because I was talking to a buddy of mine. Some people don't necessarily value technology efficiency, right? So you come in and you're like, hey, we can leverage this technology to be a little bit better, and they were like, have at it.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah, it was good. It really gave me some good exposure, some good experience. And it was a great runway. And again, as a college student, having something that you're at least remotely interested in, it gave me a great foundation then for my first job in Kansas City, where I'm still located today, and went to work for a property management company and really got to do their accounting and IT work. And what was fascinating is they were outsourcing their accounting work and they wanted to bring it in-house. Well, fast forward several years and I'm now an outsourcer. You know, I'm bringing clients' work, to our business to outsource. So kind of flipped the script, as far as I was in the business. Now I'm actually working out of the business as a fractional CFO type companies.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So, well, let's kind of rewind to that. You've tried some things. Obviously, yep. The common thread is bookkeeping, and so you're narrowing in on that. But on the same token, so you did a little bit of programming. Was that in the high school period, or was that? Are we jumping ahead?
Yeah, a little bit back. Yeah, I was gonna say back then, man, it was like BASIC and COBOL and some of those kind of things, and so that would have been college and some high school. But those are great. Having some of those kind of things, building and construction industry and all of those are great backgrounds because it gives you just that. I'd say a more well-rounded, if you just pick one path and just stay down it, you might be a little bit limited in what you can talk about. And so I think all those experiences have been good. But it was fun developing websites back when, it was pretty manual, HTML and those kind of things, where there's so many tools now, it's almost cheating. So
when it's This is a fun concept in and of itself, because the whole I agree that folks should try things, because my path was particularly like I thought for forever I wanted to be a network engineer, right? And to be fair, but I also didn't realize the difference between a network engineer and a systems engineer. Yeah. And the moment it was kind of like a parent, like it was me and a buddy, and he ended up with network engineer, which is what I thought I'd always wanted to do. And then I ended up in a systems engineer style position. I was like, oh man, I'll take this all day long. And I'm still, I could do the network side pretty darn good. But what I noticed is I'm so much better at here's an environment. Mm-hmm. We have no clue what's going on. Yeah. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Than I am at. It's black and white. Mm-hmm. It's either black or it's white. It's either working or it's not. Flip the switch and it's done. Something about that level of 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah.
It's like my mind just rejects it. But the moment we enter this primordial, like we're not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
And path to solution is what we're most interested in.
Yeah.
That's when it's like, all right.
Yeah. I think you and I met on a project. I had a project in my home office that I wasn't getting connectivity. And it was a little bit of a problem during a holiday of all weeks. And you came out and diagnosed the situation, came up with some great solutions. And so, man, kudos to you. I could see that coming through in your background, it sounds like. So.
Yeah, shout out to Scott. It took me a couple minutes. Somebody introduced us. It was like, who was it? It was Scott. Shout out to Scott there for being willing to, introduce and
connect.
That's
right. We'll blame him. So that's right. So,
I love it. I love it. I think you've probably realized that's an interesting thing, too. You'll run into people, and some people will connect.
Yeah.
And some people, it's like, I don't know if it's just like not in their nature but it won't. So some people are connectors and some people aren't.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, all right, let's, okay. So you obviously tried a few things. You really zeroed in on bookkeeping, so tell me about, you talked about a scenario where you were doing, and I may have been confused, where you were working for a company and you did IT and bookkeeping or.
Yeah. So a property management company in Kansas City that, they had a small office. And just helped them with some really point-to-point networking and set up that was back in dial-up, Sam. So, it was dial-up to, remote hosting situations. And so a little bit of that back in the day. And again, some of these things you kind of dabble in and like, that was fun, but that's as far as I want to go with that. And But it was really good to learn that process, but really move from, again, kind of that bookkeeping to accounting to really starting to get into even that CFO piece that, hey, let me use the numbers to help make a difference. And so that, I think that first couple jobs, even in college, really developed bookkeeping into accounting. And then once I got out, really moved into more of that CFO side. And so that was really, again, very, you know, we can use a 2020 word, pivotal in that process.
All right. So now we're going to tangent a little bit because I'm seeing, all right, so is it safe to say you're a problem solver? You've got a high ingenuity. You see, when other people see a slew of problems, you're like, you're almost kind of excited.
It depends on the problem. If it's my problem, probably not. But yes, for others, yes, absolutely. So,
okay. So a friend of mine would say that, you know, that's a high ingenuity. Mm-hmm. Have you experienced difficulty as a result of that, right? So you've got a solution in front of you. It's apparent. Mm-hmm. It's like, obviously, but somebody else doesn't see that. It's not. So they bring you a problem and you're like, I don't understand why I'm looking at this. The solution is easy. Mm. That would be an example. There's more examples, yeah. But I'm trying to.
Yeah, I think that's a good example. And I would say early on, I would say, yeah, definitely that. Let's jump to the conclusion. I think one of the things I've noticed even in myself is growing into becoming curious versus jumping directly to the solution. And sometimes in that curiosity and asking better questions really lends itself to a whole different solution. And sometimes the person asking the question is really the solution. They have the solution. But it's asking better questions, I think, Sam, is really where I've just noticed that in people that I look up to, that it's like, man, what a great way to equip the person that brought the issue to begin with, versus just saying I'm the almighty answer person. So I'd say ask better questions would probably be the where I would go with kind of what you're describing there.
All right, that's fantastic. Okay, so we're gonna keep in with the vein. So how do you? I mean, you run a company with a sizable team. How many folks now?
Yep. Just yeah, we have about
the audience catch
up. Yeah, about 20 on our team, and they're spread across the United States.
20 folks across the United States. Yep. You've been at it for 25 years. You've been through a few folks, right? I mean, if we had to spit a number on the people that have come in and out of Folding Management,
more than two hands can count. So yeah, more
right,
than two.
Right. So a few folks. Okay, so here's this. How do you navigate deciding, you know, hey, I'm going to ask better questions. Mm-hmm. I'm going to equip them, you know, and I'm going to be here for them. How do you navigate that versus, you know, we're in a situation where this isn't a fit and I know now that it's not a fit and we're not going to be able to is that a lack of mentorship ability on my part? Should I have seen sooner in the interview process? Right. Like what caused that to hit that point? Because I asked this, I think, partly because there's a rule of thumb, like hire slow, fire fast, right? And transparently, it's a good rule of thumb and it's helpful. Yeah. And then, you know, you talk to other folks and they'd say, oh, man, you could have mentored harder. Like they're this type of personality. Like you have to talk to this type of personality in this way. How do you find yourself juggling that? Do you have some rules of thumb that have guided you
so
there?
I kind of heard a couple questions there, but I'll talk about the hiring piece. And somebody asked me the other day, or they said, well, you must be hard to work for, because my wife was talking about the early days of our company and how she would come in and fill in as a receptionist type role or admin type role. And honestly, back then, Sam, it was, hey, I know your brother, so you must be good. Why don't you come on and work for us for part time? You know, and oh, I know, you know, I go to church with you. You must be come on. And there was no discernment as far as can you do the job? You know, are you the right fit? Do you fit the culture? All those different things. And so we had a lot of part time revolving door, situations there. And again, that was leadership. That was just being naive on what it's like to hire people and mentor them and grow them. And over the years, just through some great training and companies and mentors that do it much better than us, is just learning, you know, to develop those systems, to develop a multiple interview process with several steps, and finding those that are, they fit the role, they fit the culture, the communication style, understanding their communication style, and doing some assessments as far as can they do the job, you know, and so those have helped tremendously. In fact, I haven't done it recently, but if you would look at our retention now compared to the first 10 years, man, totally, totally different.
Mm, that's fascinating. Okay, so obviously defining the role, that helps, personality tests and a flow.
Yeah.
Do you have like a trial period? Like have you, or do you have a series of tasks you can almost assign even before that help determine this is it?
This is it.
This is the hire.
Yeah. Yeah. We do. We try to do it within about a 2-week window, but, definitely we've also even once they've come on board, really have developed more of that orientation model. Somebody said, do you do any training? Absolutely. My goodness. It's ongoing, but definitely those first 90 days, it's very, I won't say intense, but very deliberate, very, you know, intentional, to make sure that, boy, they know what's required. They know what a win looks like. We do what's called success statements. And what that looks like is, hey, in 30 days, you should be saying this, you know, I've mastered this particular, you know, task or I'm doing this. And so those success statements really help the team member, the company know, are you winning at your role?
All right. So tell me about what was the catalyst behind you starting your business?
Yeah. Yeah. I this is, would have been, well, boy, back in 2000, probably even, right before 2000, I was working at a CPA firm, working way too many hours and to the point where I ended up in the hospital. I was getting horrible, horrible heartburn to the point where they were even talking esophageal cancer. And so it was like, hey, if you keep doing this, you're going to really create just a long-term effect. And so as I got out of the hospital from that kind of wake-up call, I was having lunch with a colleague of mine, and he goes, I can't believe you haven't started your own company. And it was just that affirmation from a trusted friend that said, hey, I think you could do this. And I hadn't, I don't know that I even had given it much thought before that, but it just sparked some ideas on, wow, I might be able to do this. And started out with three little clients and actually hired a bookkeeper, kind of account manager day one. And we were off and running. And I think we went a whole year, Sam, without selling one new client. And so we had three little clients, you know, that we took care of and just really went deep with them. And what's neat is one of those little clients from all those years ago is one of our biggest clients today.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. So that was it. One of the big four. I've learned this term. It's a newer term. Oh, big four accounting.
Accounting firms.
Just kind of curious. Because now it seems a semi-common story, or one I've heard at least a couple times now, where an accountant starts on at one of the big four, and then similar sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, and I would, again, with your listeners, I would encourage you. Your body is going to tell you. Are you doing all right? I heard a business leader the other day saying they went to the hospital or called the doctor because they were having heart palpitations. And the doctor's like, you need to get to the emergency room right away. And they did all these tests and everything. And the doctor said, your heart's fine. How are you sleeping? And the person said, oh, I slept back in March. And the doctor said, it's October. You haven't slept well since, you know, the last 6 or 8 months. And, you know, sometimes if you're not sleeping well, you know, if you're always fatigued, if you're just depressed, those could be signs that maybe you're not in the right spot. Maybe you need to do something different.
Yeah. 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 You're not kidding. And how many people almost try to avoid that? Sometimes it's easier to go to the doctor and get medications and checkups than it is to
Yeah.
Address the underlying problem.
Or just let me work harder. I just need to work a little harder. You know, I'll suck it up. I'll get through this season and
I'll have the money next year.
I'll have the money next year to take time off. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, sometimes there's not that next year. So, but I think it's finding balance. And so, you know, you're talking about when we started, one of my goals was, is how do I do what we do in a 40 hour work week? And so, you know, and so many people in our industry, in the accounting industry, you know, 50, 60, sometimes 70 hours or more is unfortunately the norm. And so, it definitely, our income changed drastically that first few years. But the balance, and we talk about peace of mind with our clients today. It was that peace of mind and that getting clarity. A little bit was that self, you know, kind of self-medication, if you want to say, as far as kind of drinking your own Kool-Aid. And so I think that helped in, you know, we talk about get clarity, grow profits, gain peace of mind. A little bit of that, man, we applied to ourselves. So that way we know, hey, this is what's healthy for an entrepreneur and a business owner.
Yeah. Now I need to call out fun stuff, how, you know, tech stops for no man. So my primary camera, which has had this problem before, and I did what so many folks do at certain times and ignored it until it became a problem, has decided to die in the middle of a podcast, which was my biggest fear. Should have definitely addressed the problem sooner, just to show how we all sometimes. Anyway, I'm going to keep going because nobody on audio will notice. They wouldn't have if I hadn't said anything. Only the video folks will. And now, you know, for the folks on video, it's just going to be a slightly worse experience because this is the built-in laptop camera.
Hey, it looks good. Looks good.
I appreciate it. So, all right. I really want to zero in on that first year then, because you're three clients. Okay. So you start on with the first three clients, and I think you said you went a year before really onboarding another one. How did that feel? Was that doubting? Was that frustrating? Was that, you know, we're just going to double down on these three? When did you start to, and then, so it's kind of two questions.
Yeah.
And this might be much different. When did you start to onboard folks, and when did you start to, like, let's focus in on the marketing and sales onboarding experience?
Yeah, and I would say that first year, there was definitely a freedom, I don't have the demand of working so many hours, and I don't have that stress of what that can bring. And so I think, you know, if I really think back, yes, it was scary, but man, I'll tell you, the family life was so much better. I got to spend time with our kids. You know, they were like 3 and 5 at the time. I got to do things, you know, my wife and I got to spend more quality time just, you know, just enjoying life. And I think sometimes we give that up because I'm going to get a big raise if I move to this next, you know, this next, or if I work harder, or this next client. And so I'd say there was definitely freedom in that. And I want to celebrate that, not just say it was all, you know, beans and rice. Yeah, there was definitely some cutting back of things. And some of that we had planned ahead. I had brought on a gentleman day one, and I just actually had a conversation with him the other day. He was with us, like, I think 13 years or something, just an incredible guy. And we were laughing about, I thought, man, I felt so bad about bringing somebody on. He had a family to take care of as well. But I mean, we never missed a paycheck. You know, it was just, and just kind of having fun in the process. So I'd say if you're in that stage, man, embrace it. Know that it's going to be a challenge possibly, but just embrace the, you know, the wins along the way.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. And there's some fantastic ones early. But I also want to talk about the emotion, because I remember, you know, what you said, some of that we planned for. And what that triggered in me is, you know, me and my wife, similar sort of thing, some of that we planned for. But when you're in that valley, at least at the time for me, and still some I'm working on, you know, sometimes emotionally, that's like, it hits different than it did when you were looking at it on paper. Like, oh, it's fine. Yeah. We're going to do this thing. And then you're in the beans and rice scenario, coming back to the books.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say I'm going to even fast forward, Sam, to kind of all the way to year 10. In year 10, if I go back and look at maybe our business plan from day one to year 10, yeah, we're doing billions of dollars in business, man. We're, you know, we're serving, you know, your company as far as the accounting. I mean, we're doing all that. Well, that wasn't happening. You know, we're not doing $1 billion at year 10. And I think at year 10, I'd hit a little bit of, I don't know, disillusion, a little bit of burnout. Some people, you know, might use that word. Boy, just really kind of in that kind of down stage. And I had gone on a mission trip to Honduras about that time. And if anybody's done mission trips, they can be very euphoric and boy, you're making a big difference. And I remember coming back and talking to my wife about, just having this really call towards missions. And we'd even talked about selling everything here and moving off and doing something like that full time. And you know, I was just thinking, man, if the business is just kind of just a little bit plateauing. And we were talking to a group of friends at that time. And one of my friends said, well, maybe the mission God has for you is the business he's already given you. And it was just a snap of the fingers. It was just that light bulb moment that thought, oh my goodness, he's exactly right. And we can do missions through business. And I'll tell you, if you were to look at the trajectory of our business, that was kind of the turning point of just putting along to really being intentional about what we're doing in missions and how we're serving our clients. And you can almost see the growth, I mean, just kind of kick in right around that time. And so that, you know, it took me 10 years to maybe get through your first year question there, but so don't do like me, figure that mission piece out a lot quicker than I did.
Yeah. I tell people, yeah, I was in a thing the other day and, it was networking is what it was. Yeah. And I remember, you know, it's funny because, you know, on paper and people even, I had a guy yesterday, he's like, man, you are like the stereotype, like you're great at sales. He's like, I don't see you ever struggling with sales.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because in the early days of networking, I remember, like, you know, there was one particular networking event that was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Because there was an open bar and about one thing of rum and coke was all I needed to feel comfortable walking up to complete strangers. And and so the thing I said in the group, I was like, look, if there's one piece I can give you, it's your mission has to be higher than the task at hand. Because the difficult ones you will never do.
Yeah.
If it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. And the mission needs to be more than I want to make, you know, $1 million or 20 million or whatever your number. I mean, it has to be more than self-centered.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, again, as your listeners are thinking about their mission. Yeah. What does that look like? And how does that help others and serve others? I was just meeting with a business owner the other day out of New York, and that was, she was talking about that same thing. How do I make my mission more than just about me? Hey, I want that new house. I want that new car, you know? And so it's, how do we, let's make our missions about serving others. And well, if we raise others up, guess what? We're raised up in that process.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I don't even know if it doesn't, you know, especially when you're starting out, I don't even know if it has to be super complex.
No.
I think it can be, you know, what for me, I think early on, I mean, there was a lot of them. I wouldn't be able to point to them as easy as maybe I can now.
Yeah.
But like one of them was just, I want to build a company that I would want to work for.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you know, it was okay. So you have to get to a point to where you can hire people or you never pull that off. And you have to be intentional about culture or you can't pull that off.
Yeah.
And it has to be the culture that you would have stayed in. And if at any point you just adopt what the other people say you should do, the other people say the culture you should have, which might be a great way to build their business, but then you've fallen off the mission, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes we'll develop our mission statement for work and it doesn't align with our mission statement at home. And so there's like these boxes. And so the more those can align, you know, what my vision, what my values are at work are the same as at home. So being intentional around that. And I'm curious, you mentioned, I'd like to have a company I'd like to work for, I'd be curious, you know, what are some of those things? I mean, real specifically, maybe two or three things that you'd like to work for this company because it, and then finish that question. So are there two or three things that you think about that this describes the type of company I'd like to work for?
Yeah, as in like the type of company I'm trying to build or like what was those definitions
when I kind of started?
Yeah. You know, it and I have to be careful because there's a part of me that's like, am I being unfair to the folks that gave me very good positions in the past and helped mentor me?
Yeah.
And that's never my intention. But I think part of entrepreneurship in general, right, is like, we weren't made for it. Mm-hmm. And so then it was never going to be that way. It was never going to work out. So then, but then it's like, okay, but in my mind, there's a world where I got hired by a certain type of company and I may have never quit. So what was that company? What did that look like?
Yeah.
Well, that company, you know, it'd have a world where the departments all appreciated each other, right? Mm. There wasn't maybe a tension between sales and delivery. Because, you know, sales makes delivery job harder. And that's just kind of the nature of it. More clients means more work.
Right.
But it also means raises. It also means a new opportunity to serve more people. And then that's the next thing is it's like, okay, service.
Yeah.
We're not just, it's not about the paycheck. To your point, it can never be about the paycheck. And I think we're in a really good place where as a society, and I was telling a friend, I was like, I think, you know, there was a time when if you had a job, you were lucky.
Mm.
And then there was a time when if you had a career, you were lucky.
Mm.
And now we're in a time where I think those two things are plentiful enough that more and more people are starting to wake up to the notion that like, no, I want a calling.
Mm.
And so it has to be to serve our clients, our community, you know, those around us, those we hire, those we, and it's interesting because to the point about the mission, it's hard. The first time you have to fire a client because you can already tell they're not going to treat the team with the same level of respect that you think the team needs treated in and you want to treat them in, that's not easy. And it's not easy when you're looking at the books, right? It's the first time you have to fire a team member when you're like, you're a good person. There's nothing wrong with your person,
right?
But it's not going to fit culture wise. It's not going to fit, not because we're not good people, but because there's these extra things that just, you know, maybe it's a faster pace. Maybe it's even a slower pace. You know, it's just not going to fit with the team.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is spending time early to define that ideal client. So that way, maybe it prevents you from even bringing them on to begin with. And if you do bring them on, you've got that nice definition like, oh, I'm not sure how we missed this. We're going to put this in place, you know, next time. But defining those early, even like your core values, defining those. So what do we stand for versus we're just happy people? So all those kind of things, define what it is that you want to work, you know, what type of company do you want to work for? So those have been helpful in hiring, in onboarding clients, all those kind of things.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It's it's a fun thing to do. And it's things change, right? Environments change. Clients get acquired and maybe the new company, it's not the, you know, teams go through transitions in life where maybe it's not the, it was a great fit then. And it's interesting because this would be another fun topic. So, you know, I feel like there's companies you go to work for and it's like, hey, we're family. Mm. And then there's companies you go to work for where it's like, well, we're not family, we're a team.
Yeah.
Which I resonate closely with. But for me, I almost discover it seems like there's a middle ground where like you could be close with the individual while simultaneously holding them accountable, while simultaneously like having the conversation of pay and not have it be, well, I thought we were family and now I'm, and the reason I, you know, it's because, so that was another thing that from a culture perspective, I wanted to create a world where it was kind of like, we could be a team. It could be about business.
Yeah.
But we can also be close. It could be personal. But it doesn't have to be so personal that we feel slighted, you know, when things are just, it is the way it is, right? This isn't because I don't love you or care for you, or this is just, the way it is.
Henry Cloud, Dr. Henry Cloud has a great book called Boundaries, and that can be a good resource for, you know, what do we call that? Do we call it a team? Do we call it a family? And or staff, employees and boss, you know, all those kind of language. So defining your language that you're using, because some people are going to hear family and are like, okay, we must be Facebook friends. And others are going to say, hey, we're not a family. You know, we're, I get a paycheck from you. You tell me what to do. And so, but defining that internal language, is going to help set the tone for, okay, here's how we operate.
Well, and to that end, you know, it's different people talk differently. You know, I worked in scenarios where it's like, the company, it was called family, but that always rubbed me weird because the moment I went to ask for a raise and the answer was no, it was like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
And yet other people in the same firm were like, are you kidding me? That was my favorite part about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so that brings up a good point too. How are you, you know, with different teams and different personalities, how have you found best to navigate, you know, that kind of conversation? Like, and you mentioned personality tests. So is there one that you're particularly a fan of, and how has it enlightened who fits what seat and how we talk to that person in a way that they can receive?
Yeah. And I would say probably more communication style assessments versus a personality test. Communication styles are helpful. We often use the DISC profile, and the DISC talks about kind of that dominant, that we'll call influential, steady and compliant, might be some terms you might be able to use for DISC. That can be helpful. And again, just knowing how do I communicate? How does this person communicate? One other assessment we've used more recently is the Working Genius Model by Patrick Lencioni. And that's been a fascinating, it shows, kind of measures six areas. Two that you're at, they call a genius on, that you really lean into. Two you're okay on. And then two that are just frustrating areas. And so we applied that, or we took that as a team. And it was funny. There was one outlier in certain areas. And it happened to be me. I was the outlier. And so do you get rid of the outlier, you know, or do you lean into where their genius areas are? And one of the areas was what's called galvanizing. And that's taking the team and leading them up the hill. You know, here's what we're going to be doing in the next couple of years. And what's funny is a lot of our team doesn't. That's a frustration. They don't want to do that. But that's something I've really leaned into. And then finishing things to the nth detail, oh my goodness, that can be extremely frustrating for me. But most of our team, you think about accountants and CFOs, they need to take things to the nth detail a lot of times. And so it's great to have a full team of those that are doing that for our clients. And so leaning into those really have helped us really fine-tune our org chart. And in fact, we ended up through that and through EOS, another system, actually raised up one of our team members to a COO role that can really manage the day-to-day operations. And it frees me up to do more of that visionary piece. So we got that visionary integrator model going. And that, I'll tell you, that has been just a game changer for me to be able to lean into really my giftings, my purpose, we'll say, and also give somebody else a role that really fills their bucket up. So does that make sense or resonate with?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I'm feeling silly. You might be the first person to have defined communication style test versus personality test. Because and you nailed it. So that's what I love about DISC is I can very quickly, like, you know, your DISC and which one are you? And that is going to tell me how you're going to receive information. It's actually made it a lot easier for me to navigate D, because frankly, I used to just think, you know, you'd run into D and you're, you know, point we made earlier. It's like, oh, you're just a jerk. You know what I mean? Like, as a high I, it's like, oh, man, you're a jerk. Yeah. But then if you take the test, it's like, no, they're not a jerk. They just want to get to the point. They want to get to the point quickly. And if you can have that conversation in the way that matters to them, all of a sudden it's so. So working genius, because I've heard this one a couple times now, is would you classify that as a communication style or a personality test or a little bit of both?
Actually, that one is maybe more your work style or maybe even work preference. Okay. And so when we talk about it, I talked about a lot of our team members really like to take things to the nth detail. It's called tenacity. You have wonder, invention, trying to think, discernment, galvanizing, enablement, and tenacity, I think, are the different ones. And so it really helps, you know, if somebody's wonder and they're just dreaming up new ideas and you're going, I just need you to get some work done around here, you know. Well, some of their creative ideas may take some discernment. So I'll jump ahead to, and if you have somebody that's really good at discernment, they're not good at ideas, but boy, they can take your idea and break it down and, hey, this makes sense to go forward with or it doesn't. That can be helpful. And you need somebody to take those good ideas and take the team up the hill. And you need somebody to take them all the way to the nth detail. So a lot of it's going to be more that, I'll say, work style. And so the more you can, as you build your team, have people in each of those areas and make sure they're functioning in the right areas, yeah, that can be really, really helpful in the process.
So working genius and DISC, those are the ones in your book. That's the magic sauce to
that's part of the tools that we use. And we do other assessments and so forth. But going back, Sam, to kind of your you know, when you kind of had this epiphany as far as communication style, even think about when you're doing a sales presentation, like with your IT company. If you have a high D, they want you to be quick and be gone. Okay. Give me the detail. How much is it going to cost? Okay. I'm ready to sign. Versus somebody that's a high C. I want to spend an hour with you, Sam. I want you to talk about anything. I'm not going to buy today. I need some time to think about it. In fact, I'm going to need more details. I'll get back with you next month. Okay. So if you know that going in, you're not frustrated as a salesperson. I didn't get the sale today. Well, the communication style didn't call for that. But if you know I need to follow up in a month because that's when they're going to make that decision because they need time to think about it as a high C. If it's a high I, I want to hear about the kids. I want to hear about all the, you know, all the personal stuff. And so that's going to help in that sales process. Does that resonate?
Yeah.
At all? Yeah.
No, it does. Well, it's fascinating navigating that in sales too, because especially in like B2B, you know, you can have a high D, high I, and a high C in the same room. And then you got to kind of quickly navigate out like, all right, okay, you know, the high D, you know, do you really need to be here for the full thing? Yes. Oh, no, I don't. Thank God I'm out.
Yes.
You know, call me back when you're ready to sign.
Yes.
You know, and then the high I, let's, all right, you know, it's, and then the C, it's like, fantastic. Here's all the paperwork. And navigating that was especially fascinating. If you don't have a sales background, so tell me, Rusty's, all right, so coming back to scaling and when you decided to like focus in on, so these things didn't come naturally. When did you hire an account executive early on that navigated that for you? When are you acquiring cold leads in the door and you're having to start to figure out not just navigation style, communication style for the team, but communication style for the leads?
Yeah.
When was that? What did that look like, that development?
Yeah. And again, that was probably around that year 10, maybe year 12 time period. And our models maybe a little bit different than maybe your traditional accounting firm. Again, we're that fractional CFO accounting, kind of that back office a lot of times. But, you know, so what we're looking for when we're looking for clients is we want to go deep. Not wide, meaning we're not looking for 1,000 new clients. We're looking for 15. Okay. Mm. And so what that does is it gives us a lot more time to develop the relationship first. And that's good for both parties, both the client and us. And often we'll take our clients through the DISC, our prospects through the DISC. And sometimes if it's really out of range, if they're really heavy in one area, we'll address that together. And sometimes we'll say, we are not going to be a good fit for you, Sam, because we're just not good at communicating with this style. And I know this, it could sound like a cop-out, but it's also a, you know, you've done this a number of years and you kind of know who you're going to serve well. And sometimes it doesn't serve, it just doesn't work well. And so that's been an interesting model to kind of go through. And then again, those can be pretty egregious, outliers when we have to do that. But that's been helpful. And again, ours are going to be more relationships. So a lot of times we'll meet people in a round table group, like a business advisory group, and just develop that long-term relationship before any type of, hey, could we have a conversation afterwards, type situation.
That's good. Fantastic. Okay. All right. So let's, that's interesting too, though. So you try and limit about 15 per year?
Yeah, it depends on the year, but yeah, I'd say 15 to 20 is probably a good pretty recent goal. We could say, hey, that's kind of what we're looking for this year. And that's just a good model. We found that to be a good growth pattern for us over the years. So,
well, and it's an interesting thing too, that I don't think necessarily a ton of people, frankly, in the marketing space, think about and or realize in the marketing or sales space. I was having this conversation today. It's like, what if you had 1 million leads and you closed 1,000 deals? And it's like, no, you can't possibly onboard that many people. Like, that just doesn't happen. Yeah. Industry leaders are onboarding these many clients.
Right.
And I'm talking to those folks, and they're saying this was the most they could possibly ever close when they were well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
And so it is an interesting thing, because it becomes more about nurturing that process, making sure everybody's comfortable with the decisions, and then you too have to make sure it's like, okay, this is going to be one of the 15 to 20.
Yeah.
Is this the one for us?
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely, people are going to be different. I know some people in our space that, they're running and gunning and adding clients, daily, and that's fine. Sometimes those will be short lived. Hey, we'll have them for a year. Normally we'll be working with ours, my goodness, 4 or 5 years on average, in some over 25 years. And so it really depends on, again, as a business owner and what's the mission of the company. But for us, it's been that let's nurture, let's serve before selling model has tended to work well for our clients and for us.
How do you celebrate your wins?
Yeah. So I just actually did a blog post on this recently and talked about celebrating in the middle. Sometimes you celebrate when you maybe sign a new contract or then you celebrate in the end, the end of the game kind of thing, but you forget, you don't celebrate in the middle, because that's when all the work has to happen. And I was just in Ethiopia earlier this year and got to work with some entrepreneurs there that are going through single moms who are going through a 3-year program, going from literally down and out to becoming entrepreneurs. And these ladies were a third of the way through their program. And they just finished their sewing module of this program. And it was so much fun. I mean, we celebrated, they got certificates. We did a nice meal and they broke out in song and dance. They were singing some, I didn't understand the words, but it was just a celebration of, hey, we've accomplished this piece of it, already. And so there's so many lessons I could have taken from them. I haven't started my dance moves yet, but sometimes it's just, remembering or telling, hey, everyone, we've hit this milestone. And years ago, we hit a big milestone when we were all working together. We're a virtual company now. And I asked our team in our office, I said, hey, how do rock stars travel? And, oh, yeah, limousines and stuff. And I said, hey, I've got a stretch limo in the parking lot, and we're going to take it, and we're going to go downtown Kansas City for a big, big lunch today, just as a celebration of this milestone. And, you know, and so sometimes it's just having those fun, you know, fun things you can do like that. And, you know, that was still one. That was several years ago, and our team members still talk about that just because that was just kind of a fun, out of the ordinary thing. So find those fun little things. They don't have to be expensive, but do something to celebrate those milestones.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you? So remote company now, yeah. And you've been a remote company for two or 3 years?
Since 2020. Yeah. We went remote, sent everyone home during COVID and and then never invited people back to the office. So yes.
Okay. How are you navigating culture and team? Like, you know, it seems like team building activities, it seems like that's a whole different game when it's remote first.
We were really, really intentional during COVID around mental health, you know, making sure people didn't feel isolated and had a buddy system that, you know, we're checking in with throughout the week. And, you know, I talk about really three things that we've found helpful in our environment. We've seen others. And one's invest in your team weekly. And what that looks like for us is we have everybody joins a staff meeting once a week. And part of that incorporates shout outs. You know, I mean, just simple shout out, man, Sam just really helped me on this project this week. And you know, or a client will call in or text in and say, hey, I want to let you know, Sam just, you know, made a huge difference in our company. And so anyway, shouting out, encouraging those. And I just heard a quote this week. They talked about encouragement is the adrenaline of the soul. And I thought, oh man, that's powerful. And so anyway, that's a big deal. And then the other thing is incorporate fun in serving opportunities. And so what that looks like for us is we'll actually do virtual parties. And I thought, that's the silliest thing. That is, I don't even know if I'm going to show up for my own, you know, Christmas party. That, I'll tell you what, Sam, our team does an amazing job. I mean, you think about, we've got a bunch of accountants, and when accountants are running around during we had a scavenger hunt the other day, you know, find these things and you know, people run around their house finding things. It was so funny, you know, just seeing people really engage in this, and their kids are getting into it as well. And so if you incorporate the family, that's amazing. And then we also do serve events together. And so that can be virtual in nature. Like we did a 5K for, or 6K, I'm sorry, 6K for World Vision to provide clean water around the world. And so we raised money for that. And then the third I, so we talked about invest, incorporate. And the last one is invite everybody in town for a team get together, a celebration. And so we'll actually have all of our team members coming into Kansas City for a 3-day event. We'll have some family time. We'll have some strategic planning time, and then serving in the community. And so we'll actually get to go out as a team together and get to serve at one of the local charities here in the Kansas City area.
That's cool. That's really exciting. That reminds me of too. There's a thing coming up in September, Wings for Water, where it's a barbecue.
Yeah.
You vote with your money, and then all the money goes to a clean water charity.
Well, what was neat is I've been involved with this World Vision organization for about 8 years, just personally doing some running and so forth, raising funds. When I was in Ethiopia this summer, I got to go to the headquarters in Ethiopia where they're actually going out and drilling wells for clean water. And so neat when you get to see kind of that end result, or get to see people in the equipment and all the things that you're doing back here to help support. And so that was really kind of a nice visual to get to meet some of the people that are in the day-to-day and boots on the ground.
Yeah, and I love this progression you're talking about, where it's like, you know, at the 10-year mark in your mission and how you're helping and that your business can be the mission. Because similar sort of scenario where I was like, man, do I, you know, pack up? What do I do? What do I do here? Because I need to... And, you know, the book Driven by Eternity by John Bevere
no, no.
really helped Yeah, well, it's such a good book. It was kind of the first one for me to really, series of books after that, but it was a good one that helped me kind of like, oh, wow, okay, so we can, it seems like a duh when you say it in retrospect, right? But it's like we have these talents for a reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been blessed with these talents for a reason. Yeah. And you know, why throw those away?
Yeah.
To pursue something that's clearly not your calling, otherwise you wouldn't have those talents. We can use those to further the mission, to further the vision, to help the community.
Yeah.
And to your point, it's interesting. I love that why I'm saying this is because you mentioned basically full circle, where you go and you see kind of the end result of the harvest, if you will, for lack of any better term, of the seeds that you've been sowing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes, and I don't know about you, but my question is always, what's my purpose? That comes up, you know, like, oh, I don't know what my purpose is or my mission. And there's a another good book. I think it was called Strength of Purpose by Elizabeth Dixon. And really an easy read. We actually had our team go through kind of a study group guide or whatever around that. But you know, through that process, I came up with five kind of key words that you know, when I think about purpose for me personally, and you know, I talk about encourage, guide, equip, serve, and listen. And if you think about those five, at least, you know, and you're going to have different ones, but if I've done those five throughout the day, that's been a good day, you know. If I'm kind of lacking in those, or I'm just going to do my own thing, man, it just kind of, you know, you just kind of feel yucky. And so, you know, if you can identify some of those things, man, you just feel, again, I know we used the word calling earlier, but what's that calling? And if you can lean into that, boy, it's just going to be more fulfilling and purposeful, you know, for your life.
No, and it's beautiful because it's funny. Somebody told me once, I can't even quite remember the full context, but you know, I have these days where it's like, I feel it's like, man, that was a really good day, right? I got X, Y, Z done. Yeah, and then some days where it's like, and then somebody said, and then some of these days where it's like, oh man, I don't feel like feel like the day was wasted.
Yeah.
And then somebody said, and I like that you, it sounds like you have this definition. It's like, what's the bare minimum?
Yeah.
That would make an effective day. And I'm, for those over the air, I'm using air quotes, but then when you have that, right, what's interesting is, I don't know what it is about the psyche here or, but the moment you achieve those things and you can do it on just any day, you're like, done. I told myself that's an effective day and I did the things. And so today was effective.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Define the win. Yeah, define the win. What's a winning day look like? And so, yeah, the more you can put in your win column, yeah, that makes sense. So
that's fantastic. So, is there anything in particular we haven't quite covered yet? I feel like it's time to start to move to a wrap up.
Yeah, I'm sure we could do a session two and talk more. But no, man, I appreciate you having me on. This is appreciate all you're doing to promote local businesses, and if people don't know, there's a great CIO guy sitting right here in front of me that you need to reach out to for definitely managed service work. But I appreciate all you're doing, and to again promote Kansas City and the small business owner. So
now we have two questions before we fully wrap up. So here they are. Rusty.
I should have studied.
All right, so two questions. All right, so the first, so we have a saying. And it is, if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Who's been a giant in your life that you'd like to pay homage to in this moment?
Yeah, man, there's so many. You know, I think about that. I'm going to throw my father-in-law under the bus. How about that? So he's been one of those guys that, you know, I think about a mentor in family, even in business, and even just that quiet guide, I'll say. You know, sometimes you get more out of not saying anything than somebody giving you a bunch of advice. So I'll throw him under the bus for that answer. But I'd say my father-in-law on that one.
So the second question is, has there been kind of a pithy saying or guiding statement that you found to be true again and again and again? So this would be, you know, grass is always greener on the other side. And it doesn't necessarily have to be what's helped you guide your decisions.
Yeah.
Just almost something that you're like, man, if there's one thing that I personally found to be just true in general, it would be.
Yeah. I've been a reader for years, a lot of books, and there's always quotes that come from different ones, and sometimes I'll just live in that quote for a season. And I think the one that I mentioned earlier in our talk was encouragement is adrenaline for the soul. That one has just stuck with me. That's probably one of my more recent ones that I think has been just kind of powerful, reinforces just that, hey, let me just say something encouraging to Sam today, you know, and you can just see a lot of times somebody's countenance just light up. So encouragement is the adrenaline for the soul, I think would be, yeah, one for today. So
I love it. Thank you so much, Rusty, for being on.
All right, Sam. Hey, I'll look forward to our next lunch. And hey, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.